200 years ago, a classic of English literature was born.
It's alive! It's alive! It's alive!
Out of a dream.
In the name of God, now I know what it feels like to be God.
Or a nightmare, so it was said. It was June 18th, 1816, at a rented home near Lake Geneva. Storms rolled in, one after another that month, providing an unsettling atmosphere for three young people who were amusing each other by telling tales of horror. Sherry Zeck, Associate Dean of the College of Fine Arts at Illinois State University and GLT's culture maven, says Mary Shelley, Percy Shelley, and Lord Byron were not merely caught up in the Gothic atmosphere. They were contributing to it.
They set a bet with each other on who could write the best ghost story while they were there. And as we now know, Mary Shelley won.
Boy, did she.
Boy, did she.
She came up with something really amazing. A man of corpses brought to life by science. And it came out of a dream that she had.
Well, so she says, but there was a lot of that going around. Remember, Shelley himself, Percy, claims to have come up with Kubla Khan as a result of a dream. So I don't know whether that is a story she told or if it is, in fact, reality. It seems to me more likely it was just kind of the going story about the creative process.
Well, how does someone like Mary Shelley come up with the concept of Frankenstein, of essentially she had a man who was giving life? Do we know what was in her mind?
We don't exactly know what was in her mind, but we know what was in her social sphere at the time. And these were people who, they were all writers, they were all well-educated thinkers. There were many conversations that they were having about life and death and those things that one talks about while drinking cocktails at Lake Geneva, I guess. I
as
done
one
that
does.
Myself, but as one does, one talks about the meaning of life. Certainly the Romantic period is very much about what is the nature of humanity, what is its relationship to the natural world, what are the positives of education and refinement and the reach of science and knowledge, and what does it take away from us? Also significantly, E.T.A. Hoffmann had just started publishing his short stories or his novellas in Germany. When people think of European romanticism, they think of flowers and lying in the grass staring at the sky kind of stuff, but there's this whole other element of European romanticism that is
really
precursor for the horror film and the horror genre that we know. It's more gothic.
Very gothic.
And Hoffmann, who was both a musician, composer, and a writer of poetry and stories and novels, was one of the greatest at that genre, and they were very keen on the German writers. We also have Goethe writing Faust, another version that Marlowe had written earlier as Dr. Faustus. So an old idea of the overreach of knowledge and of man, with a capital M, trying to be God in some way. I think it's not really a story that came out of nowhere. In that sense, the Gothic aspects of it were an active cultural element that they were interested in. The philosophic elements of what makes someone human, what are the positives and negatives of education, and the fact that she was an atheist. And so questioning God and God's existence and the so-called right of God to create was certainly something that was part of her upbringing and her thinking that ended up being a rejection of the notion of God. She was one of the better educated women of her time. She was raised by parents, both of whom were radicals and writers. She really was in the right cultural mix to question all kinds of received notions of humanity, male versus female, that sort of thing.
When the book was published a couple of years after she dreamed it up, It was published anonymously.
Yes.
Which, from our point of view, is kind of heartbreaking that she couldn't take credit for. But that was actually not uncommon in that era, that a woman publishing something would do so anonymously. But do you think the subject matter of this book made it even more important for them to have her publish this anonymously, that the public would have been outraged to initially have learned that this was written by a woman?
Possibly. I don't know if it would be outrage or if it would be suspicion. There have been people throughout history who have suggested that, well, maybe it was really Percy's book because, you know, could this chick have written this one of the greatest novels of all time. So there may have been a number of things at work there. I don't think, given, I don't know Mary Shelley, I'm old, but I'm not that old, given the people who raised her, the people she was, who were part of her social circle, being outrageous or being criticized publicly was not going to be anathema to her. That was going to be
almost
just
a mark of honor.
That was just going to be just fine.
She's hanging out with Mr. Mad, Bad, and Dangerous to Know, Lord Byron.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that it seems much more reasonable to me to think that it's another kind of game. The anonymity game was like the "this came to me in a dream" game. It also gives her a little bit of deniability if it wasn't a marvelous success.
Let's talk about the monster that was created, the Frankenstein monster, which has really taken on a life of his own.
As it were. That was kind of the whole problem.
Over the years, have we perceived the monster and how we use him in other types of popular culture? Has that really changed in the past 200 years?
I think it has, for the most part, in that in Shelley's book, it's really quite a question, who is the monster? Is it the creation or the creator? So who's the monstrous one? Frankenstein, who creates this creature and then denies this creature love, which is ultimately what sends him on a rampage, denies this creature human fellowship, recoils in horror the moment he comes to life, or the creature itself who does these horrible things. So the creature is a much more complicated character and point of philosophic discourse in Shelley's book than our kind of pop culture notion of the monster.
Who turns on his creator.
Right.
He's an inarticulate, I mean, it's a brilliant performance. Let's look at the Universal picture that was done with Boris Karloff playing the monster. And he is an inarticulate creature. In the book, he's articulate,
refined.
He's an intellectual, that's right. So we have changed him into something that makes him even scarier in appearance, and the fact that we can't really communicate with this guy.
Well, I think what happens is he's only scarier in the sense that we make him truly monstrous and unnatural. In the book, his basic problem is that he's ugly. His patches of skin don't match. There's long descriptions of the color of his skin and his eyes, and the manner of his creation is out of whack, right?
Mm-hmm.
But his thoughts are as complex and refined and worthy of knowing and discussion as anyone else's in the book. So it's sort of a question with Mary Shelley of which is the romantic hero, the creator who overreaches or the monster who comes from this patchwork of nature and can't survive. And I think that that is more scary, that really that is the thing that is more terrifying, because it asks us to look within us and see what in us is capable of horrific acts. The film versions, whether it's the Hammer films in Great Britain in the 1950s, or whether it's U.S. films, or whether it's the comedy of Mel Brooks.
Dr. Frankenstein.
Frankenstein.
You're putting me on.
No, it's pronounced Frankenstein.
To make this monster something completely inhuman and other is kind of easier for us to take psychologically. Think of how we handle serial killers in culture, or murderers, or people who commit violent crimes. It's much easier for us to talk about them as being mentally ill, as never having fit in society, as somehow always being different from us. It's much harder for us to talk about violent and horrific behavior as coming out of a culture in a kind of logical way because of the way we react to violence in general. So I think that's what we see in the evolution of the monster. It's not that it makes him more horrifying. It's that it makes him less a thing that we have to look at the true horror of, which is what is wrong within ourselves.
The book and many of the films that have come after the book from Mary Shelley gives us a man who is manipulating life through science. He's creating life. He's changing things through science. This is something that we are still faced with today. Is this why we still have Frankenstein on our must-read list, our must-watch list, because it's still something that today, even more so, we are faced with and must struggle with the philosophical questions.
I think if people read the book Frankenstein, they find that it is incredibly relevant to the kinds of questions we ask today about when science overreaches. One of the hot debates in our country even now is about the use of stem cells and cloning, and when does science go too far in playing God? And that certainly has its basis in religion, but it's not just about religion. It's about an idea, whether it's true or not, but whether an idea, when you step out of what is part of the natural order, when you step outside the natural order, consequences can't be controlled. And what are the boundaries of that? We're having essentially the same kind of debate with GMOs. We're having the same kind of debate with transplants. I think one of the central fascinations of this, too, is of the whole Frankenstein idea, too, is that a man can create life without a woman. I think that is a huge part of what makes that story go on and be fascinating. And we have comedic versions of that with Arnold Schwarzenegger having a baby and other things like that. But this is kind of a perennial fascination in popular culture, is how to get a woman out of the
equation.
Out of the equation, right? So it really can be a totally man's world. I don't see that really as being a central concern of Mary Shelley's. One can never avoid gender, but she doesn't seem to really be investigating this as a gendered phenomenon, in my view.
So she's not investigating it, but we're receiving it that way in some of our interpretations.
Yes, and that's sort of how it fits into our cultural psyche, our continuing cultural psyche.
That's Sherry Zeck, GLT's culture maven, who says Mary Shelley's book is a rich experience and highly recommends it. If you want to see a film version of Frankenstein, she's a fan of the 1931 Universal version starring Boris Karloff. For a film that's pretty faithful to the novel, Zeck says check out Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, a Kenneth Branagh film with Robert De Niro as the creature. I'm Laura Kennedy.